Hello, everybody. I'm Charlotte and I'm an addict. Thank you for asking me. I'm very nervous. I'm not used to standing in front of a microphone either, but I'll just tell you a little bit about myself. I'm from Wales, from Cardiff. I'm 38, and I've been clean for 560 days now, thanks to this 12-step program. So I was born in Cardiff. I'll tell you how I got here. I was born in Cardiff, and as a child, I was quite self-conscious, a little bit shy, but, you know, my family were quite dysfunctional. There was a lot of fighting going on in the house, and I just sort of kept myself to myself. I didn't really notice, well, when I was 10, I sort of started smoking. Like my friend would steal fags off her mother and I would smoke the cigarettes. But on my 12th birthday, I got arrested for shoplifting. Even though I had money in my money with me, and I didn't understand why I'd sort of done that. And then I was sort of drinking, sneaking alcohol at that time. But by 14, I was drinking alcoholically, as in, every day in school, I was raising money, selling cigarettes to buy alcohol after school, and I was smoking weed, but so was everybody else. So it wasn't, you know, anything out of the ordinary where I was from. At 16, on my 16th birthday, I was arrested for drunken fighting. And that was a pattern throughout my life, to be honest, on my birthdays. My last one being my 36th birthday, I woke up in Crawley Police Station. But in between that, so I left school at 16, I wanted to become a solicitor. And I went to college to study law, and I ended up spending most of my time in Wetherspoons across the road. And I didn't do, you know, I was more into the criminal side of law than actually, you know, being a solicitor. I met a guy, moved in with him, 18, and he used to take a lot of prescription drugs, and I just used to take his prescription drugs with him, and I didn't really think it was a problem, but my life kind of was starting to revolve around every day smoking weed, taking speed, taking DFs, and drinking, and this sort of went on for 7 years, but it was kind of contained, and when I was 25, I left him because I wanted to stop taking all the drugs, and I kind of thought it was him. So I left him and went and sort of sofa surfed around everywhere. And I was working, but I was sort of claiming benefits. I was working cash in hand, claiming benefits. I had nothing secure and stable in my life, really. But I wanted to better myself. So I left him. And I met a drug dealing boyfriend. He used to take cocaine, and I'd never taken cocaine up until the age of 27. And I started to take cocaine with him. And I didn't have to pay for it, really. You know, I was doing a lot of deception and fraud at the time, but I wasn't really, nothing substantial was happening in my life. But I started to grow drugs with him. That was how I was sort of making my money. But it was a violent relationship, and I wanted to leave him, but because I had these drugs growing in my flat, and I had a council flat, and I also had a house I was renting with all these drugs growing, and I couldn't see a way out, so I caused a fight with him, got him arrested, robbed all his drugs, and then I sort of got an injunction against him, and that was kind of how my relationships was sort of going at that time. So anyway, I sort of left him, and I thought, what am I going to do? I, at that time, my family started to putting out my partying and stuff. I was getting arrested for, like, assaulting taxi drivers. I was getting arrested for violence and stuff. And my family was saying that I had a problem with alcohol, and I didn't think I did. So what I thought was, as long as I stop by the time I'm 30, I'll be all right, because I'm just a party animal, you know, and that's what I kind of thought. And I used to sit in the pub, and I'd be drinking on the wall outside the pub. I'd see a lady walking past with bottles of wine. I'd be like, pisshead. You know, I'd see people in the street, heroin addicts. I'd be like, they're smackheads. You know, that was my whole attitude to drinking drugs. But I didn't know that I hadn't had a day from about 14 without using any substance. But anyway, so I decided that if I got a better job, moved to a better area, and got everything that I'd never had, that it would sort me out. So I did that. I sort of put my mind to it, and to be honest, I had robbed quite a lot of people as well. So I had a bit of money behind me, and I got myself a really good job, and I moved to a really good area, and all I did was swap speed and cider for champagne and Coke, basically, and that was what I did. So, but I had this really good job, and from the outside, everything looked really well, and everybody was saying how well I was doing. But like, I started not going to the pubs anymore, and I stopped going out because they banned smoking, or I got banned from the pubs, and I thought, I'll just sit in the house on my own. And I was just sitting there sort of drinking, sniffing, and it started to be like three days. It'd spill into my work week. I was still working, but it'd be like 3 days, and then, you know, and then it was sometimes it was 5 days, and then I started to get hospitalized. Like, I'd fall over and I'd crack my head open, and I didn't, you know, and I'd be falling around my house and stuff, and my family would be phoning and sending paramedics and stuff to my house, and my works were offering me counseling, and it's just that things were spiraling. But I had everything. People were saying that I had a drink problem, and I was like, I'm not an alcoholic. I'm not one of those people that sit on the streets drinking. I have a flat, I have a job, I have everything, you know. I think I'm just lucky that I had everything still at that point, because my works give me time off to go and have counselling, but I didn't really think that I had a problem. I genuinely didn't. Anyway, the day came where paramedics knocked on my door, and they basically said, if I don't come, they're going to section me. And I didn't really know what, I'd been on another sort of bender, but I didn't really know what had gone on. So anyway, they took me to hospital, and my muscles were wasting, and they were basically saying that, they asked me some questions. They asked me what day it was, and I was like, well, I don't know what day it is, because when I drink, I wake up in the night, and I genuinely didn't know what day it was. And so they sectioned me, and I was in this mental hospital, and I thought that my family had paid them to keep me in there. I genuinely didn't think that I had any kind of a problem. But in this place anyway, so they detoxed me from alcohol, and I had a bit of a coding problem as well, so they detoxed me from that. And then they basically said, if I take anti-abuse and naltrexone, I can leave, as long as I go to the drug and alcohol services 3 times a week. So I agreed to do that. And I genuinely thought I was all right. And I thought, okay, I have a little bit of a problem with alcohol and men, you know. And every time something happened, it was usually a bloke involved, so I would just blame them. So I did that for 3 months. And after 3 months, they gave me the prescription to give to my sister. But I went and cashed the prescription, and I used to pour the tablets out and fill it up with aspirin. And then I thought, well, you know, I'm sort of in control of this. I sort of believed in that 3 months that I was choosing to take these tablets. I was choosing to go there and do this, you know. But then I swapped the tablets. I fell over, got hospitalized again. So I then started just to, like, have breaks. I would take the anti-abuse, then I'd have a couple of weeks off, have a drink, and I was just sort of controlling my alcohol intake like that. So I decided then, my family was starting to notice that something wasn't right. So I decided to move to Ipswich from Cardiff, because they were on my case all the time. So I literally met a guy and moved in with him up in Ipswich, and didn't tell him about anything that had gone on. And things were all right. Like, when I used to meet guys, I'd be like, yeah, I'm really independent, and I look good from the outside. I've got a good job. I've got my own place, I've got this, I've got that. And then literally, before long, you know, some monster appears, which is, you know, my disease of addiction. But when I used to get arrested as well, I used to wake up in the police cell, and the police officer would say to me in the morning, someone different came in last night, you know, and I never understood what they meant. But anyway, I moved to Ipswich with this guy, and I didn't tell him anything. He used to take Coke and drink, and I remember, he said, oh, I'm going to get some alcohol. Do you want some? And I was like, yeah, get me some champagne. And while he was gone, my stomach was flipping over, and it was not a nice feeling. I think it was because I was being dishonest about, like, with my family and stuff. But yeah, so he, you know, within 6 months I was black bagged and I was gone from there. I'd smashed his house up. Yeah, it wasn't pretty. But I used to go on holiday quite a bit as well. So on my Facebook, I would always put a selfie on holiday. I was in Turkey, all these places, and I used to pay for people to come with me. And it got to the point where people would stop coming. And I went to Turkey. I went to the bar the one day, and then I spent 10 days in my hotel room on my own, and then in the hospital at the end with dehydration and stuff. So that's how my holidays were going. But anyway, I ended up going back with this guy to Ipswich, and yeah, and another 6 months, and then by then I was starting to feel like no matter what I had done, I'd got the job, I'd got everything in my life, no matter what I was doing, I didn't feel right inside. And emotionally, I would say that's all I could describe it. But I was in this relationship. I tried to take my own life. And then I went back with him. We booked a holiday to go to Las Vegas together for my 36th birthday. And a couple of nights before we were going, he was going to work on the Saturday morning, and he said, as long as I don't drink or take drugs when he's not there, then it'll be okay. So on the night before, we both was drinking and taking cocaine, and in the morning, he went to work at 6 o'clock, and I woke up, and I knew this for a long time. When I wake up, no matter what time of the day, if I've been using or drinking the night before, I need to use again the next day, and I didn't know why, and I used to do tests on Google, am I an alcoholic? And I used to do all these questions and be like, are you the last person at a party? You know, do you ever drink in the morning? And I'm like, well, only on a Saturday and Sunday, you know? And like, I used to sort of rationalize this stuff. And then one question, and I'd be like, yeah, definitely not me, you know? And then I used to Google, am I a psychopath? Am I a schizophrenic? You know, and people around me are saying, you're an alcoholic. But I would have rather have been bipolar or a schizophrenic than an alcoholic. I was not willing to admit that. So anyway, so I'm with this boyfriend. He comes home. His kitchen is nearly burnt down. I'm laying on the bed, and he literally kicks me out. So I drive to Gatwick Airport, and I think, do you know what? I'm going to Vegas without him. I've got 10 grand to spend in Vegas, and I plan to fly over the Grand Canyon. I was going to shoot a cow with a gun. I had all this stuff planned. But you know the reality of every holiday that I'd been on leading up to that? I sat in the hotel room on my own in all these nice countries. I would sit there on my own, just continually drinking, sleeping. You know, if I could get coke or anything, I would do that. So anyway, I went to Gatwick Airport, and I booked a hotel, and I was drinking. And I put my case on the plane, and I had this feeling in my stomach that I was going to die. And I took my case off the plane, and I don't know why I did that, but I just had this really, really impending doom feeling in my stomach that something bad was going to happen. So I took my case off the plane, and I just booked into the airport, and I stayed there for, I think it was 3 days, and just continued. And I was sitting with people going on holiday, talking to them, you know, well, where are you off on holiday? You know, it's absolutely bonkers. And then I woke up on a blue mat again, and the police gave me the phone, and it was my sister, happy birthday. And that was my 36th birthday, and I was like, right, I'm done, like, it's fucking my life up. So I drove home from Crawley Police Station. By the time I'd got back to Cardiff, I was on my way to, I went to Asda, and I bought a load of booze. Phoned up my dealer, load of coke, and I was at home, and I was just smashing it. And then I decided to drive down to Dartford, and I have no idea why, but I drove to Dartford, and I used to book into hotels so my family wouldn't find me and hide in places and that. And I booked in down in Dartford, and I remember I was in my work van. I remember coming downstairs, and I just seen police and two policewomen. They were on the phone to my boss. And I was like, shit. And they had my van keys. And I was like, she was like, I'm on the phone to your boss. I was like, shit. So the boyfriend had gone. And as far as I could see, my job was gone. I'd already texted my family, I'm going to kill myself. All that shit was going on. And I was like, fuck, how am I going to get out of this one? So I just booked around the roundabout for a couple of days, drinking and contemplating what I'm going to do. And I Googled, and I was off my head, and I Googled rehab near me. And I thought, if I go into rehab and hide for 28 days, all this shit going on outside will vanish, and then I can go, look, I'm doing something for myself. I didn't want to stop, but that's what I thought. So this lady came within 40 minutes, and the money that I was going to spend in Las Vegas, I paid for this rehab. And this lady came and picked me up within 40 minutes and took me to Luton. And I went into there, and I was obviously, while I was waiting for her, I was drinking what I can, you know. And then I goes into this rehab, and I seen the Serenity Prayer on the wall, and I'm like, what? You know, and I thought, this is some kind of cult. And but because I paid the money and all this shit's going on outside, I thought, I'm just going to stay anyway. I had nothing to lose. And then I heard people in there talking about crack, heroin, this, and I was like, I'm not like these people. And I knocked on the door of where the staff were, and I said, excuse me, I think I'm in the wrong place. And they gave me the Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I started reading the book, and I genuinely thought that they'd spoken with my family and they had told them about me to write this book to try and convince me that I was an alcoholic. And but then I noticed everybody else in there was reading this book, you know, but I was obviously having Librium and stuff in there, and I was like, but I'm not an alcoholic, you know, and I couldn't grasp that concept. And then people from CA started coming in to share their experience, strength and hope. And it was funny, really, because it was this lady sharing about, her drug of choice was heroin. And she was sharing, and something clicked in me. It wasn't the heroin or the amount that she took. It was the way that her head thought. And you know all those things I was Googling, am I a psychopath, am I a bipolar? What she was sharing was what was wrong with me. So I was like, something snapped inside me. So I stayed in there, and I write a life story. I wrote my life story, and on there was drink, drugs, gambling, men, shopping. You know, do you know the disease of addiction is not the drug of choice. It's not, you know, it's the thinking and using stuff to fill that hole in my soul. Now, I understood that. So in there, we did step 1, 2, and 3 kind of academically. And step one, I was like, yeah, okay, I understand. I can't drink again, you know. And I thought, I know what's wrong with me. So they're basically telling me, if I put a drink in me or a drug, I don't know when I'm going to stop. I agree with that. I totally agree with that. History tells me that. All that, you know, 22 years of drinking and using tells me that. And if I don't, I have a mental obsession, and which I agree with that. I'm sitting there in the day, and I'm, you know, constantly thinking, how am I going to get off my head later on? So I agree with that. So I left rehab with the knowledge, and they told me to get a sponsor, go to meetings, and I left there after I paid £7,700. They told me what was wrong with me. I agreed, and I met all these nice people that I got on with. I left there. I went to a meeting. But I didn't want to get a sponsor, and I didn't see how God was going to save me. I didn't understand that. You know, I've been trying, and I've done all right, because I've got a job and I've got this stuff. I lasted 12 days after that, you know, on self-knowledge and all that money spent, and I couldn't understand it. So I went back into CA, and I got myself a sponsor, and I got myself a home group, a service position, and you know, against my will, I was so afraid of people. I didn't even know I was this social butterfly, I thought, but I was so insecure and nervous, and my service position was meter and greeter. I hated hugging people, you know. I just didn't like it, but I just sort of listened to what everyone said, and I started to work through the steps. And it was step one, okay, my life is unmanageable, you know, I understand that it's chaos. You know, wherever I go, I leave a wake of chaos, and you know, and I am a drug addict. Step two, willing to believe in something greater than myself. I don't think I was, but I said I was, you know. And then step three, handing it over. I was like, yeah, okay, you know, but I didn't actually mean it. Like I actually buzzed off CA and the fellowship and all that stuff. But I actually thought, I still don't know if I'm 100%. And, you know, time went on and 6 months went by and, I did my step four and I didn't tell my sponsor some stuff because I thought that she won't like me if I tell her this. She won't want to sponsor me. She'll think this. I do people's thinking for them as well, as well as my own mess at thinking. I think of other people's. So, yeah, so anyway, I got 6 months from working some kind of program. And after 6 months, I thought, well, I've done 6 months on my own, you know, so if I only drink and use every 6 months, I'll be okay. So I drove to the Lake District this time and got smashed to bits in a hotel room in the Lake District. And I rang my sponsor up and I told her, and she was like, drive back home. Well, I didn't. I drove to Scotland instead. And I got to Scotland, my auntie lived up there. My auntie had just been diagnosed with cancer and she let me stay in her house. And I was in her cupboard looking for a cancer medication to see what she had. Because I used to do that, I used to go to people's toilets in their bathroom, open their cabinet to see what they had that I could take. You know, that's just what I did. But anyway, I drove back from Scotland and I went to a meeting 3 days later and I hadn't used or drunk for 3 days. Somebody shared in a meeting, I'm the real deal. Once I put one in, I can't stop. And my head went, well, I stopped, you know, and then that was it. I continued, but I didn't tell anybody. Now, I'm in CA. I'm chairing my home group at this point. I'm doing the fundraising events, and I'm still using, and I'm not telling anybody. I just sit in the meetings thinking, I don't feel connected. These people, you know, I'm blaming everyone around me. These people are not making me feel welcome, you know, because I was like lying. And anyway, so after 6 weeks, I phoned my sponsor up and I was like, I'm fucked. I want to kill myself. And she was like, why? And I told her I'd been continued. But I was reading the book as well. I was reading more about alcoholism while I was doing this. And it was at that point when I phoned my sponsor up 6 weeks later that I knew that I was every day I was like, I won't do it tomorrow. I won't do it tomorrow. And every tomorrow that came, I kept doing it. So I went and stayed with my sponsor for a week to detox and go back through the work. And step one, that was my step one right there. I had to live it like that. And then step two, willing to believe in a power greater than myself. And I thought, do you know what? I'm just going to use the program. The program can be the power for now. And I'm just going to have faith in that program. Because I didn't understand how do you hand something over to something else? Like, didn't grasp it. And then I did my step three prayer, and I meant it, you know. And do you know that I love that prayer, and I meant it. And then I did my step four, and I put on there everything, every single thing. And you know the things that I didn't tell her because I thought she wouldn't like me. She was like, I did that, or I know someone, you know, and it was like nothing, you know, that it was massive in my head that she's going to not want to sponsor me and all this made up stuff. And sharing that was so freeing. And then like step six and seven, like my defects of character. And I was really, really surprised that I had as many as I did. Like, I didn't think I was self-seeking. I didn't even really know what it meant. I didn't know what resentment was. You know, I didn't know what all this stuff meant. And, you know, and when my sponsor said, just write down all the people that you don't like or you know. And it was massive. Like in 1992, my mother didn't invite me to her wedding, you know, bullshit like that. But I added on to it because she thought this. There was loads of stuff like that where I do people's thinking for them. But yeah, step six and seven. And I found it really difficult to like sit there and pray on all my defects. So one thing my sponsor used to do was like defect of the week. You know, and we would just sort of concentrate on one defect, and I'd pray and pray. You know, and dishonesty was the one that I needed to pray on, because I keep stuff from her. I'd be thinking, you know, I'd be doing things, and I think, oh, I won't tell her that. You know, and I'm getting loans off the bank, and I'm, you know, getting into debt and stuff, and I'm like, she don't need to know that. You know, and it's dishonesty, and I'm just using money and other stuff. But step eight made a list of people that I'd harmed. Like, the list was massive, and I was really scared. Like, I didn't want to go back to ex-boyfriends and shops, and I'd robbed the government, you know, and there's some that I could potentially go to prison for. And I said to my sponsor about it, I'm not willing to do that. She was like, let's go back to step one, where you're willing to go to any lengths, you know, and she reminded me that, you know, I'm going to die if I don't do this stuff. So I did my list, and she told me to do willing, not willing yet and never. And obviously, when I took it to her, she moved them all over on the columns to, you know, willing or not willing yet. There was no nevers. So then I started to make amends, and I went to a load of shops, and basically, you know, all the shops that I'd robbed from. I wrote some letters. My sponsor said to leave the ex-boyfriends because going back would harm them. But I did bump into one of my ex-boyfriends, and I made amends to him. And he was like, "Are you fucking mad?" You know, he couldn't understand, you know, me apologising and taking responsibility for anything. But yeah, and then step 10, you know, continue to take personal inventory. That's really important, because that step 4 build up, if I don't do step 10 every day, that builds up and I get sick, very quickly. You know, because even people looking at me funny, it could be the smallest thing in the world. You know, I need to get resentment and I need to get any harms sorted straight away. And then, yeah, my step 11, prayer and meditation. And I think that's when my sort of higher power, my God, that's when things sort of changed. And I started to see a higher power or a God working in other people first, because I'm codependent and I like to look at other people rather than myself. And, you know, but I started to notice, like, things changing in other people's lives. And then I realized something, you know, every day I wake up and the obsession is gone. That's not me. For all those years where I woke up and just used somebody, and, you know, that's not me. And, you know, like my defects and my dishonesty, like even silly stuff like claiming something back on expenses, like I did do that in recovery, and I sat at my desk after doing it and I felt uncomfortable. And it doesn't sit right with me. And I had to go up to my boss and say, "Look, I added something on there that I shouldn't have." You know, and I had to do that because I get sick really quickly. But I still have thoughts to do things like that, you know. And then step 12, working with others and being of service. Now, that for me is not just in the fellowship. I have to be of service in all areas of my life. But also not be of service where I'm codependently enabling my drug addict boyfriend, you know, because I can call that service. And it's, you know, it's not right, like. But, so I started working with other ladies and going back through the book with others. And that, it gives me goosebumps. It's absolutely amazing. And, doing this today, you know, I don't like sharing, but I know that those ladies that came into my rehab and shared for me, that's when my journey began, you know, and that's all it takes. And I went into a detox unit last week, and when I was in a detox unit, you know, like, it might have made a difference if somebody would have come in then. Whether I was ready or not is another thing, but it might have planted a seed. So I think it's, you know, for me, it's really important to do this stuff. And do you know, life today is like, so, well, in early recovery, I was like, this is fucking boring. You know, because I was so used to the chaos. And on my birthday, I woke up, I'd done some prayer, I'd done some meditation, I went to work, I finished work, spoke to my sponsor, and she said, "How's your birthday?" I said, "Shit." She said, "Why?" "Because you didn't wake up in a police cell, you know, in your own sick." And I was like, she's right, you know, actually, I'm so ungrateful sometimes, you know, and I need to remember, you know, where I came from. When I pulled up today, the two ladies on the gate, they was like, "I know you from somewhere." And I was like, "Yeah, I was in your rehab." And they went, "Shit, you didn't look like that when you come in." But I forget how sick I was, you know, and I really do. And I can sit there sometimes and think, "Oh, I'm not going to the meeting tonight. Oh, you know, they do my head in, it all sick as fuck, you know." And that's my disease, that's my illness. You know I am sick as fuck. And I know, and I need to know that every morning I wake up. I'm Charlotte and I'm an addict, you know, and today I'm not going to use or take, I'm not going to take drugs, I'm not going to drink, and I'm going to, how can I serve others? How can I be of service? Even if it's making teas in work, if I'm sitting here on Google, Googling something about myself, why am I so bored, or some shit, you know, make cups of teas for people, because when I'm in self, I'm of no use to anyone, and I quickly go in deep and make up a load of imaginary shit about people. You know, and then I'm back to resentment, and then all of a sudden I'm blocked off from that higher power that everybody's saying, you know. And that, do you know, for me, that is the beautiful thing, and I do see it today. Like, in recovery, it's been ups and downs, but I haven't had the obsession to use. Now, I was in a relationship, And my emotional barometer went up, and you know, my boyfriend used, and I didn't want to let him go, and all this stuff was going on, and randomly I phoned my sponsor. I'm like, I keep checking what he's doing. I'm obsessing about it. So there's no step 12 being worked there because I'm worried what he's doing. So I'm being of no service to anyone else. And then the phone rang, and it was the CA helpline. They're like, oh, we got a lady in Bristol who needs your help. So I speaks to her, and she was in CA for 8 years, and she's been out there for 9 years because her boyfriend relapsed, and she didn't tell anyone. She stayed with him. That's higher power. That's how come she was just put there in my path at that moment and made me realise this is what's in store for you if you don't put your recovery first. You know, and I got goosebumps now, and that's for me higher power God moment, you know. But yeah, I'm gonna leave it there, everybody, all right. I hope someone got something from it.